So this is a new segment we got going on. In recent talks with Gerald Horn, one thing that he's hinted at is the black left in the States or even in the Western world really being tapped into what's going on around the world. And Momodou and I, heavily agree with this sentiment, and we want to, kind of contribute to raising, consciousness, not just here but everywhere, about the happenings globally with regards to, working and poor people and the concerns of working and poor people globally. So therefore, we're starting a new segment. We're calling it the Crisis Update. And the origins of this is, initially we were thinking that Du Bois is kind of a great figure with regards to internationalism. And he had started, the NAACP's first publication called The Crisis. However, he had stopped being editor for this publication in 1934 when he had deviated from the NAACP's position of, what was ultimately liberalism. And, as Du Bois gets older, he gets more radical. But however, despite this deviation and where he had left the publication of The Crisis, we still found that The Crisis Update is a fitting name given how capitalism operates and how imperialism really plagues our world. And even as David Harvey writes in many of his works, including The Enigma of Capital, and even the sociologist Wolfgang Strieck, they allude to crisis being built into capitalism, and crisis being, inherent in capitalism. So I think, as long as we are in this era, and as long as we're, struggling, crisis will always be present somewhere, somehow, sometime, and it's important for us to keep abreast of it if we were to struggle against it.
Absolutely. And speaking of Gerald Horn, I can hear his voice in my head right now when he constantly said, internationalize the question. You have to keep internationalizing the question. So we're hoping by this segment, the Crisis Update, we are providing or contributing to that internationalization of the questions of what we should be thinking about. And honestly, this is the first episode, and I'm more than excited to be in conversation with someone I consider a friend, a teacher, and now my co-host on the Crisis Update. So, our first story for this week. This story comes from a dossier produced by Tricontinental, in which it speaks about the plight of Black South African farmers, and it speaks about the reproduction of generational poverty. And in contrast to generational poverty, or what you cannot have the existence of generational poverty without the existence of generational wealth. And generational wealth in South Africa is kind of expressed or manifested through white people making less than 10% of the population, but still own and control most of the land. And in fact, this was a critique of Mandela, actually, that whilst the administrative powers in the country post-apartheid were blackened, black faces in high places, it was a question of land that wasn't changed. So what we find that they are paid subsistence wages, next to near poverty wage, actually, then able to survive. Again, the reproduction of generational poverty, and black people are unable to lift themselves out of that predicament because they do not own the land. And this is why I kind of, when thinking about this story, I immediately was called to most the story of most socialist revolutions around the world in history is what? Is that the land? The question is of land. We hear of agrarian reforms. I straight away I think of Cuba's Castro when he, was nationalizing industries and, sharing up the land to people, encouraging collectivization. We hear the same with Hugo Chavez as well in Venezuela. And straight away I'm called to think of the quote of Fanon, in which I'm going to read now. He says, "For colonized people, the most essential value, because the most concrete, is first and foremost the land which will bring them bread and above all, dignity." We will also post links to the story, which can be found on the Tricontinental, and I believe it's their 53rd dossier. Moving on shortly, we are talking about Thai workers. Right now, Thai workers who produced goods for Victoria's Secrets to be awarded $8.3 million to sacked workers, which will be spread between 1,250 workers. Why? Because a company that is, I believe, domiciled or owned by someone in Hong Kong shut down due to the pandemic. But Thai law mandates that a severance package must be paid to the workers, and they didn't receive the package, and therefore they fought them in the court and won, and they will be awarded $8.3 million, which once again proves the kind of power that is within unionizing and collective bargaining and collective work.
All right. The next story we want to talk about is Algeria suspending a treaty with Spain, and first Spain supporting Morocco over the Western Sahara. So on Wednesday, Algeria had announced suspension of the Treaty of Friendship, Good Neighborliness, and Cooperation that was signed with Spain roughly 20 years ago. And they've done this in order to protest Spain's shift in position on the Western Sahara. This occurred hours after the Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, said his policy shift on the Western Sahara has improved Spain's bilateral relations with Morocco. This shift in policy position occurred in March by endorsing Morocco's plan for autonomy for the region. It's important to note that Morocco claims Western Sahara, but Algeria has been fighting for its independence via the Polisario Front movement. For greater context, in 1975, the region of the Western Sahara was not given complete self-determination by its colonial power, Spain, as demanded by the UN. Instead, Spain allowed Morocco to advance its military forces and overtake this region. And so the people who occupy this region, who are called the Sahrawi people, have been dealing with a situation that some would compare to Palestine. And in that vein, and in relation, the next story is about Venezuelan President Maduro. He took a visit to Algeria. He visited Algeria after his visit in Turkey in order to boost economic cooperation between Algeria and Venezuela. The Venezuelan and Algerian ministers reviewed issues in the area of energy, oil, gas, agriculture, science, and education. They had relaunched the high-level joint commission to carry out a bilateral economic agenda. And on Thursday, they also established collective positions on the right to determination of Palestinian Sahrawi people, denouncing Israeli occupation forces. So in this meeting, Maduro had addressed, you know, the issue of the Sahrawi people in the Western Sahara. They also stressed the importance of holding elections in Libya. It should also be noted that while Maduro was making these visits, Joe Biden held a summit of the Americas, which is a summit concerning issues of those in the Americas, especially on the issues of immigration. And he held this summit in Los Angeles. And Venezuela was not invited, along with Nicaragua and Cuba, because of their left positioning. And for this reason, Mexico, Guatemala, and Bolivia boycotted the summit. And so, actually, I saw it earlier on Twitter. I believe Black Alliance for Peace were protesting the summit because, and as they rightly pointed out, you know, this is an example of imperialism. This is an example of leaving particular parties out of these very important conversations, especially when you know, certain sides hold more power in the situation. So,
wasn't it a case as well? I think the People's Forum are hosting something called the People's Summit as well.
Yes. But I believe, you know, that's a bit more inviting to those on the left.
That's what the summit should have been like, basically.
Correct.
Moving on, keeping with the Latin America, I guess, and Caribbean, we're moving to Cuba. Cuba right now is preparing to pass one of the most progressive laws on family, I would say, in modern history. This involved a consultation process of 6 million people. Again, Cuba population is like 11 million. So more than half the population has been involved. And this kind of guarantees rights for the LGBTQ plus community, rights for same-sex couples, reproductive rights, abortion will remain free, conception is free. And I want to read two quotes from the legislation or from what the Cuban government has put out. It says, "We must be aware that this is not at all about proving that the traditional family does not exist anymore. This structure is common and will remain, without a doubt. The purpose is to understand there are other family structures which also deserve protection. And it also goes on to say, everyone has the right to choose their own family to suit their own particularities. I mean, I was really taken back by this because in a time where Western governments are literally debating the status of trans people and almost relegating them to subhuman or less human, in the time where we have lawmakers in America, Republican lawmakers, celebrating the fact that we are going to restrict the laws for trans rights. And some lawmakers are literally celebrating or proposing plans to inspect the private parts of kids internally, externally, to see their anatomy, to determine what just sex and gender they are. We have once again Cuba being a shining light in terms of progression, in terms of human rights. And again, I just think it just proves once again, people like to speak about Cuba being undemocratic. It's a one-party state. Human rights, I mean, think about it. The whole reason the reason why the West gives sanctions to Cuba, they say, is because of human rights. Where Cuba's about to pass a law that is the most progressive in modern history. And it's up to date because Cuba said that we recognize our law goes back to 1975. Times have changed. People change, how we come to understand family has changed, and we're going to do it in a participatory, democratic way. So I don't know, I'm really taken back by the story. I'm really proud, and you know, and once again, I'm proud to be on the left because of that story.
right. And the catch line for US imperialism is always spreading democracy and spreading freedom, but it seems that...
The irony.
You know, exactly. Next story we want to talk about is, you know, it's been a hot topic recently, and it was actually the topic of our most recent discussion with Professor Gerald Horn, his gun legislation in the U.S. You know, we've had some recent tragedies of mass shootings, and that on Wednesday, the House had passed a sweeping bill on gun legislation titled the Protecting Our Kids Act, and it passed 223-204. The legislation consists of 7 separate provisions, which were voted on separately. And these provisions included raising the age to buy a semi-automatic weapon from 18 to 21, prohibiting civilian use of magazines greater than 15 rounds, new federal criminal offenses for gun trafficking, and straw purchases. And a straw purchase is when someone who can't pass a background check acquires a gun through a proxy. Require ghost guns. Which are untraceable guns without serial numbers, go under background checks and receive serial numbers, impose a ban on bump stocks, bolster storage of guns in homes where minors may have access to them, and compelling the Attorney General to submit a report to congressional committees on the individuals who are deemed ineligible to purchase a firearm by a background. Most Republicans, of course, were not on board with the entire package. And the big, even though this has passed the House, the big problem is that the bill faces opposition from Republicans in the Senate, where 10 Republicans would have to be won over.
And going to the UK, Boris Johnson recently survived a vote of no confidence. For those who may be unaware what a vote of no confidence is, it's when people in your own party or people in the party of the opposition deem the Prime Minister unfit to serve. And in the Conservative Party, it must be 15%, minimum of 15% of MPs, members of Parliament, must write in and say, we no longer believe the Prime Minister is deemed fit to serve. And then a vote will take place within the party. If the Prime Minister loses, he is ousted from power. Unfortunately, Boris Johnson won by a very slim margin. I believe it was. He won like 59% of the vote. So 211 MPs voted in him, whilst 148 voted against him. So literally hanging on by his bad hair. No, but he's literally hanging on by the thread at the moment. But now it means he is immune from another leadership context for another year. Next story we're going to. Right now, there's proposals for a 3-day strike, which will be considered the largest rail strike since 1989. This is the National Union of Rail, Maritime and Transport Workers. Up to 50,000 rail workers will perform a 3-day strike. The cause of the strike is during COVID, people were obviously, I mean, we all had to bear the brunt of, you know, rising costs and government, you know, people weren't working. But because of this, now the government is trying to scale back and recuperate funds. They plan to cut thousands of jobs. They have subjected their staff to multi-year pay freezes. And people have said, we had enough. And they have proposed a strike. Whilst the strike is not definitely going ahead, the union has voted in favour of the strike. So the union has said that they're still open to communication and dialogue with the government. However, if they fail to reach an agreement, they will be going ahead with the strike.
All right. And our final story is about the OECD. So the OECD, or the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, is an organization that's based in Paris, and it consists of 38 member countries. All of these countries are high income, and they're considered, quote unquote, developed. So many, I think the majority of the members are European. And however, you know, there are some Asian countries in there. South Korea is a member. Japan is a member. It is an organization that is committed to the market economy and, quote unquote, economic development. However, they are a very highly influential publisher of economic data. They're predicting a deceleration in economic growth, and their projected rates of global expansion are significantly lower than the numbers that they had predicted in December of last year when they had alluded to economic recovery from the pandemic. They're also predicting levels of inflation akin to that of the 1970s across many of their member countries, and record high levels, as this is already the case in Germany, the US, and the UK. And I know I feel it when I go to the grocery store. this inflation is ridiculous. And keep in mind that if this inflation in levels are being akin to the 1970s, you know, this is the inflation that put, Ronald Reagan in office and was the economic pressure felt by people in the U.S. to elect Ronald Reagan. So this is a crisis level, potentially paradigm shifting economic conditions. The OECD is mostly attributing this to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. However, when asked by China Daily if Western sanctions on Russia would have a negative impact on global economic growth and supply chains, the chief economist Lawrence Boone and OECD Secretary General Matthias Cormann replied that the sanctions would be effective in hurting Russia's economy, which did not answer the question. And if anything, it just showed that, you know, the OECD, the West, when it comes to this conflict, you know, there's serious questioning and there's serious doubt whether or not they actually care about the well-being of people, because, you know, by their answer, you know, they're not answering, you know, if, you know, these sanctions are going to negatively impact these economic growth and supply chains that ultimately affect us and many other people. And, you know, this is, you know, we talked with Gerald Horn in the last episode about President of Senegal, Macky Sall, visiting Russia and visiting Ukraine to meet with leaders, and how many members of the African Union had abstained or not voted for these sanctions. And that is because, you know, there's a complex relationships of trade and supply that are ultimately connected and affect, you know, countries like African countries. So
thank you. And that wraps up our first crisis update. We hope to be doing this every week, informing you of international news, and in the name of, or kind of, and continuing what Gerald Horn said, continuing to internationalize the question. Peace and love. Speak soon.